If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, it's like the casting update episode. We have had so many updates from around the Bravo universe about who is joining shows, who's coming back to shows, who's leaving different shows. And so I figured that I would take the time to share my thoughts on all of those different announcements that we got, mostly towards the end of last week within the span of like 48 hours. So I'm going to get into all of that. But first, as promised, I'm going to spend a couple minutes up top to talk about the trip that I just took. I am back in New York, finally. I was away for 2.5 weeks traveling in Europe. I basically had two weddings of two very good longtime friends of mine, one in Tuscany and one in Lisbon, 2 weeks apart. And I was like, I can pretty much do my job of podcasting and writing from anywhere. And life doesn't often present you the opportunity to go to two weddings that you want to go to. I could, you know, finagle it financially and just take the opportunity to travel. And it's definitely front-loaded my summer. I feel like I was gone for a very long time and it was a lot. And by the end of it, I was like very much ready to come home and to not live out of a suitcase. You know, I used to carry on all the whole time. So I was ready to come home. But so I had these two weddings and I was like, all right, I might as well just do this, right? And so I filled it in between. I started in Tuscany where I was with some friends, at a friend's wedding. Beautiful, amazing, at this incredible venue called Il Borgo. Then I went to Florence by myself. I studied abroad in Florence during college. I had not been back since. So it's been 11 years since I studied there. It was really amazing to be back. And I was there for 3 days. And I went to most of my favorite restaurants and spots, which were still around. But the thing about Florence is that when I was there, obviously, it's always been a very popular place to study abroad. And it's a pretty small city. So you feel that. You feel the presence of Americans while you're living there. And that's why when I lived there 11 years ago, I traveled a lot. I went to 10 different countries that semester because I loved living there during the week and having that as my sort of landing spot. But, you know, it felt small by the weekend and living there for 4 months. So I traveled a lot back then. But this time when I was there, you really, really feel the presence of all the tourists and the Americans and the study abroad students. And I think it's also the TikTok effect of like, now I have to like wait in line for certain places that I would never have had to wait in line in, you know, again, a decade ago. And things change, but, you know, mostly I was able to go to my favorite places. There was one restaurant I was not able to get into as a single one person, you know, table, like, which was kind of crazy. And I was there for 3 days and I went the first meal I could and they were booked up for the next 3 days, which was disappointing. But you know what? You can't win them all. And it, you know, gave me some time to go to some new places. Loved Florence. Then I went to Rome, where I was also riding solo. Ended up seeing a couple friends for dinner who unexpectedly had to be in Rome after a debacle in Sardinia. Long story. So it was fun to have a little like friend dinner there because, you know, when you're solo traveling, I'm pretty good at solo traveling and I actually take some pride in that. Like I like being alone. I like posting up with my book at lunch, at breakfast, and just kind of observing the world, walking around all day, you know, bopping around. And I think a city is really a place to do solo travel because there is so much distraction and so much to see. But sometimes by dinner, you're like craving some companionship. You're craving, you know, some human connection. And especially if you're going to sort of like, you know, dimly lit restaurant or a romantic restaurant or something like that, you don't want to be on your phone the whole time. It might be too dark to read. So you don't want to be like head in your book so you can see it. So you're just kind of left there to like look around sometimes. And I definitely had a couple moments like that throughout this trip. But mostly like it was a really nice balance of riding solo, but then having people to see in different places fairly frequently. So I did Rome. Then I flew to London where I was supposed to be with a friend and her mom who lives there. I stayed at her mom's apartment. She was part of that Rome group that kind of had unexpected travel trouble. So she actually didn't end up coming to London. So I kind of had some last minute plans. I ended up going to Mighty Hoopla, the music festival, very last minute. I went on Saturday. It's a very like gay, female skewing audience and kind of artists that appeal to those crowds, which is very much up my alley, very much like nostalgia based, pop based. So I saw, who did I see? I saw Jamelia, who is this, you know, amazing singer from the early 2000s. She's British. One of my honestly favorite songs of all time, Superstar, huge hit in the UK back in the day. Seeing her see that was very surreal. Like, honestly, I love this song. Go look it up if you've never listened to it. It's amazing. Seeing her perform that live was amazing. Then we saw JoJo, we heard Too Little Too Late, Leave, Get Out. She sounded amazing. And then, oh my God, I saw the A-Teens live in the year of 2025. And if you had told me 20 years ago that I would be saying that statement, I mean, back then, I would have loved to see the A-Teens live, never had the chance to. So this year, being able to see them, they reunited last year for the first time. They had this amazing performance on some, I think, award show or something that I remember seeing. But I didn't think I was going to find myself at Mighty Hoopla. So, and I didn't know they were going to be there. So I saw them sing Upside Down, you know, the song that's like, upside down, bouncing off the ceiling. Seeing that live, honestly, like life-affirming religious experience. I posted it on TikTok. It got like a million views. Everybody in the comments was like, oh my God, like I would, you know, sell my fucking kidney to be there. And so I felt very lucky to have seen the A-Teens live in 2025. Honestly, a surreal statement. And then who else did we see? Oh, Jade from Little Mix. I mean, honestly, one of the most exciting artists doing it right now. Such a great performance. Played all her hits. Did a little Mix medley, which was really fun. And then we also saw Sierra, who was great. We ended up leaving sort of like midway through her set to beat the train rush to get out of there. But overall, an amazing day. Like, just what a fun lineup of people. And Erika Jayne did play Mighty Hoopla the next day. I couldn't go on Sunday, but that's where apparently Dorit and Bose were filming with her backstage. That's the word on the street from Brian Moylan from Vulture, who was at that performance. And that's where Countess Luann performed last year. So really fun time in London. I saw some other friends and just bopped around a lot. And then I went to Paris on the Eurostar on the train, which was pretty easy, honestly. And again, I had two friends who ended up overlapping with me there by chance and coincidence. So I had two dinners with them separately. And I went to the French Open for the first time. Again, big tennis person. I think I mentioned that. And it has been a huge bucket list thing of mine to go to the French Open and to spend a whole day there watching amazing tennis was just honestly a dream come true. And I had perfect weather for it. And I was just like, I was just so happy. I was so happy doing that. Paris is just the best city in the world, honestly. Like, I just wanted to sit out at every single cafe I saw, read a book, judge people, watch people, drink some wine. Like that, I wanted to do that. I could do that for a month, honestly. I could live. Paris is the best city. I don't forget that. But like when you're there, it's just the je ne sais quoi feeling of just like, oh, it is beautiful and perfect and just heaven. And then I went back to London on the Eurostar, had a much worse time on the Eurostar going back. The security was fucking insane, terrible, but made it to London, went straight to an airport hotel at Stansted, which is the far ass airport. Then I went back into London to go to Tottenham Stadium, to see Beyonce, to see Cowboy Carter. And again, I think I mentioned this, but was GA floor in the pit alone. Tina Knowles was there. America Ferrera was there. Greta Gerwig was there. We were sort of right below the VIP platform. Oh, who else was there? Stella McCartney was there. And it was just a fucking amazing show. The Cowboy Carter World Tour. If you have any chance to see it, go see it. The tickets are actually way cheaper in Europe, hence why I was able to do GA4. In America, I don't think I would have been able to afford that. But beyond, she was just amazing. She was in incredible form. It's a great, varied set list. There's a lot of Cowboy Carter on there, but there's a big Renaissance section. She does a throwback section. It's an amazing show. And she's just done such a good job of evolving her tours and evolving her shows as she gets older. Because she, you know, as every single artist, they can't necessarily dance like they used to be able to dance, but they're still able to put on such an incredible show. And Beyonce, I mean, she still dances like a fucking... I mean, she's the performer of our lifetime. But it's just... it's amazing. The way she's incorporated Blue Ivy into the show is just so amazing. Rumi was in it this time, and she was happy when we saw her. There's been some TikToks of her not being into going on stage. But yeah, that was an amazing show. Then I woke up super early the next morning to go to my second wedding and my last stop of the trip, which was Lisbon, Portugal. That was my one new city of the trip. Loved it there. Didn't have like that much time to explore, but it was really nice weather. Such a cool city. I did not know how hilly it was, but went to some great little restaurants for lunches. And then there was the wedding festivities. And it was, again, a gorgeous wedding at this old castle right outside Lisbon. That was a University of Michigan friend, somebody I met on the first day of college, actually. So it was a really cool moment to be there with a bunch of those people. And then I came home to New York yesterday. I'm recording this on Monday. And it was a really long trip. And, you know, again, I'm so glad I took the opportunity to go. But it was a long time. And again, I was ready to come home. And anyway, I'm sure a bunch of you didn't really care to hear about all of that. I hope you skipped forward. But that was my trip. That was my 2.5 weeks in Europe. And I'm happy that I don't have too much else planned for the rest of the summer. I'm going to Fire Island soon. And then I'll have a family vacation later in the summer. But otherwise, I'm around. And I'm very happy about that. And yeah, hopefully I can focus even more on this podcast and doing some fun stuff for it. So anyway, okay, let's get into the onslaught of news from the last week in the Bravo sphere, because there was already a lot going on, right? It was like it was the Orange County trailer. It was the Next Gen NYC premiere. Love Island started, which I think I'm going to try to watch. My VPN when I was abroad was kind of going in and out, so I was able to catch up on some shows, but like it was pretty glitchy. So it kind of took away from some of the time that I would have had to watch other shows. I'm going to try, I think, to catch up on Love Island. I feel like I've heard mixed things about this season, but I kind of feel like it's going to be a light summer in some Bravo capacity. So it might be fun to have Love Island to mix in with that. So I'm going to try to catch up on that in the next week or so. But yeah, again, it's been a lot of Bravo stuff. The Real Housewives of Atlanta reunion filmed on Thursday. And then that's sort of when the onslaught started. Paige DeSorbo announced that she's not coming back to Summer House, which I discussed at length in the last episode. So go listen to that if you want my full thoughts on that. I also, on Friday, published a piece with Decider where I sort of went long on her sort of arc on the show and her sort of legacy on Summer House. So go read that. I tweeted that out and put that on social media if you want more of the Paige stuff. But again, I talked all about that, so I'm not going to rehash that today. But that was basically the first of no less than five major pieces of casting news that I'm going to break down on today's episode. So the first was that Lexi Wood is also not coming back to Summer House. She posted on her story, "Well, that wasn't the summer I signed up for, but it definitely taught me a lot. I stood up for women and for what's right, even when it wasn't easy, and I'd do that again in a heartbeat. I'm leaving Summer House with no regrets. Well, maybe one, winky face. I'm proud of the way I handled myself, proud of what I walked away from, and even prouder of what I'm walking toward. Big things are coming. Stay tuned." So that's quite a statement. I mean, obviously the one regret was Jesse. And, you know, I think standing up for women is a big statement that she's making. I think she stood up for herself really well. I completely agree with that. And I think she handled herself pretty damn well too. Like, I think that she should be proud of that. But standing up for women is a big statement. I will say that. Again, so like this news was not a huge shock necessarily, but I also was a bit disappointed in this because, as I've said, I don't think that her treatment by Jesse or the other women on the cast was as like cruel or unfathomable or mean-spirited as people sort of seem to want to believe it was. But I do think that Lexi was a pretty good reality star. Like, she wasn't afraid of conflict. She stuck up for herself. She kind of had to stand on her own, again, sort of without Bailey there, without some of the support of the women. And like, I think that her and Jesse could have been intriguing to watch in the same house next summer. But at the same time, I'm also like kind of like very much over and tired of their conflict and their dynamic. So like maybe the producers also wanted to move on from it as well. So yeah, like again, it's not a huge shock, but I also am sort of surprised because again, that could have been a nice sort of story point. Like if you would put another guy in there for her to move on with and yada, yada, yada. But also like if her closest ally in the house, Gabby, is also rumored to not be coming back. She has not announced anything and has not been confirmed, but that is definitely the word on the street. Then she would have definitely had very little connection to the cast. Like Jesse's not the connection. Sierra wouldn't have been the connection. Wes would not have been the connection. Amanda and Kyle, no. Carl, no. Lindsay, like if Lindsay is part-time or full-time, I don't know, but they were friends, but not like super close, you know? So like, I guess I do get the decision, and I also don't believe it was Lexi's decision. I mean, that's kind of the theme of a lot of this. Other than Paige, I don't really believe that. I think that Lexi would have done another season if she had the opportunity, personally, because I think she saw this as like a boon to her career and sort of a next chapter post kind of her modeling peak. But yeah, Sierra said in that interview, I think with Us Weekly, like several weeks ago, that she was like, you know, if Lexi comes back, great. If she doesn't come back, I'll probably never talk to her again. So I guess Sierra and Lexi will never talk again. But yeah, Lexi announcement, I didn't feel super strongly about it. I did feel bad that her experience went, but that wasn't completely out of her control either, even though I think it's sort of been framed that way by other people. I think that she had power over that and she just didn't necessarily do it completely correctly. So Lexi Wood, one season wonder on Summer House.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
So then after that, we got a fake announcement that people started to believe, which was that Carl Radke was also leaving Summer House. We now know that he is not leaving Summer House. So this statement that was clearly made by AI and it was posted by like a Twitter account called BravFo, because I saw it making the rounds on Instagram and people were like, oh, Carl posted this and deleted this. And then it popped up on my Twitter feed from an account called BravFo, which is where it originated from. And I was like, people need to like get some reading comprehension skills because it's very clearly a parody account. But the statement did sound pretty accurate. It said, after much thought and reflection, I've decided not to return to Summer House for the upcoming season. The show has been a huge part of my life for the past 9 years, and I'm incredibly grateful for the experience, the growth, and the relationships it's brought into my world. Actually, I don't even need to read this whole fake. It's literally fake. It's a fake statement. So anyway, Carl messaged a fan account and asked them to post that it's a fake and a fraud, which was funny wording to me. And then he was like, I'm not going anywhere. And then Andy Cohen on his radio show today, he told John Hill, his co-host, a story about how he was filming the Real Houses of Atlanta reunion, which is produced by Truly Original, which also produces Summer House. And they were talking about the next season of Summer House and the casting decisions. And they were the producers were explaining it to him because Andy, again, is not a producer on Summer House. So presumably the producers were like, yeah, Carl's sticking around. Then the next day, Andy sees this fake statement on Twitter, thinks it's real, texts Carl and was like, hey, man, like, you had a great run, like, congrats, like, so sorry to hear that's the end of the road. And Carl was like, what are you talking about? And in Andy's mind, he was like, wait, why would that have changed overnight? So Andy fell for the fake statement, too. And he has confirmed that Carl is indeed coming back to Summer House. So I'm very curious to see sort of like what that looks like for Carl, because, again, I'm curious what he'll be up to as a full-time cast member on the season, because I feel like he didn't really have that much to do this past season, but neither here nor there. The other one is that Sierra basically confirmed that she's coming back as well, because a fan posted a TikTok where they wrote, all I can keep thinking about is Sierra alone in bed this summer. I can't imagine Sierra and Paige not being summer roommates. Who's going to share a bed with Sierra now? Who's going to be the third bed bug? And Sierra commented, Jill, stop. I can't think about it right now. So that to me basically confirms that she will be back on Summer House, despite Paige not being back. Amanda will be back because they're looking for the third bed bug. So maybe they'll find somebody. Maybe that'll be Lindsay. Who knows? It's not going to be Lexi. That's for sure. All right. So that's the Summer House news. So then we get a huge announcement on Friday evening, which is a very peculiar time to be making an announcement like this. But we find out that Rachel Zoe, celebrity stylist, founder of the Zoe Report, former star of the Rachel Zoe Project on Bravo, which ran for 5 seasons from 2008 to 2013, an iconic OG Bravo show. We find out via an exclusive announcement to Us Weekly that she is going to be on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She said, I'm beyond excited to be returning home to Bravo to join the cast of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I've been living my best new life, and it feels like the perfect time to come back to TV and share it all with you. Here we go, RZ 2.0. And then a little bit later, Bravo posted the news, and with it was this sort of like first person to camera video from Rachel Zoe herself. And she said, it's official. I'm coming back to Bravo. I'm joining the cast of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. It's been a while and you've been asking me to come back to television. And I said, when stars aligned or it makes sense or I have enough to say to share with you all. And now is the time. I'm really excited to be with all of you again. And I hope you are. So let's have some fun. So I was a huge fan of the Rachel Zoe Project. Like that show, honestly, incredibly impactful on me. Kind of in the same vein of like some of those early MTV shows for me. Kind of in the same vein of like The Simple Life, where it honestly impacted like how I spoke. Like I would say like, I die, like, bananas, like all those catchphrases that Rachel Zoe would say. I wanted to say those too as a closeted gay teenager. Like that shit was impactful on me. And that show ran like when Rachel Zoe was like a really, really big deal in the styling world. And she had some really major A-list clients. She was just such a vibe. She perfectly encapsulated that era of like celebrity culture. And you know, I think that show was also many people's entree into Bravo. Like I just think that it was a really influential show, really impactful show. And to have her back on Bravo is an amazing full circle moment. I think Rachel Zoe as a Real Housewife is something that is really intriguing and exciting to me. But it's also at the same time something that I can't really picture in a weird way. You know, like she's a bona fide celebrity. And I don't know if I can picture her in those conflicts, in those confrontations, in the group dynamics in particular. I totally believe that she has it in her. It's just this weird thing that I can't really picture for myself, you know? It's funny, but my friend actually worked for her at some point. So I kind of want to reach out and ask about what. But I remember her liking the experience and liking Rachel a lot. I remember it being intense. But after the show, my friend did work for her in LA. But yeah, so Rachel obviously alluded to RZ 2.0 and a lot of changes in her life. And the big change is that she recently divorced Roger Berman, who was her husband of 26 years. I think they were together for like 30 years. And they share 2 kids together, 2 sons. So that's a big change. And presumably we'll hear a lot about that during filming and during her time on the show. I think that was announced last year. And then she's also part of this epic group of famous women like Kate Hudson, the Foster sisters, Jennifer Meyer, who's Toby Maguire's ex-wife. Like there's this kind of group of women who like all hang out all the time. And I'm so intrigued to know like whether or not they will ever be shown on the show, because they feel like this sort of group of women who are like, I mean, some of them are A-listers, some of them are borderline, It's hard to imagine some of those women agreeing to be on Housewives, you know? But I guess, like, if Kris Jenner's on via Kathy Hilton and things like that, then, like, I wouldn't put it past any of them. I did text my friend to know if, because, like, I was like, damn, like, then that got me thinking, like, who else could Rachel Zoe bring into the fold eventually or right away? And I was like, Sarah Foster, who recently got divorced from Tommy Haas. She runs a successful clothing line, podcast, is a producer on Nobody Wants This, which her sister Erin created. She could also be like a pretty fucking good housewife down the line, but my friend who is connected to her thinks that she would never do it. Anyway, so the prospect of seeing some of those famous women on the show is really exciting to me. I'm curious if that will happen. Kathy Hilton took to Instagram to congratulate her on the news. She wrote, "I'm excited to share this journey with you. As always, we will have the most amazing time." She posted a picture of them together. And that to me signifies that Kathy will be back on Beverly Hills. That also to me tells me that Kyle is not taking a season off like a lot of us wanted her to. She will probably be back. So yeah, I really think that Rachel Zoe being on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, like, it's sort of the exact kind of unexpected stunt casting that I had said that I wanted them to do. You know, every couple of years we get a big name that people know and are familiar with who might need a second act or another act in their careers that are added to the show. We had, you know, Eileen Davidson and Lisa Rinna. We had Garcelle. We had Denise Richards. Like, we've had these things over the years where people, Jennifer Tilly, where they're added to the show. And, you know, we needed another one. And Rachel Zoe is a big one to add. So I'm excited. Again, I can't completely picture it, but I kind of like that about it, you know? And the other thing is that, like, Beverly Hills, it's sort of like the known as the sort of the fashion franchise, like Dorit and Erica in particular, Jennifer Tilly too. And Rachel Zoe is a legit bona fide, like, one of the most influential celebrity stylists of the 21st century. And so it's sort of like, I'm so curious if that is going to be, I don't know, a way for Rachel to bond with people, but also maybe a way for her to shade people. I'm very curious about that. So anyway, Rachel Zoe, I'm excited to see her on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And it kind of already has made me much more excited for that show in the next season than I have been since the last season ended. All right, so then we got the next morning, Saturday morning, again, a really peculiar time to be announcing big news like this. But Dave Quinn at People, a very reliable source in the Bravo world, he announced that Monique Samuels is going to be back on The Real Housewives of Potomac as a friend of. And so I'll be honest, my first instinct about getting this news on a Saturday morning, the morning after the Rachel Zoe news was announced on a Friday night, which are times when you usually will announce things that you want to bury. But my first instinct was that these were potentially leaked or announced to overshadow the Brit Eady lawsuit against Bravo, which is what I'll talk about at the end of the episode. So yeah, that was my first instinct. But then we got some footage and photos of Monique filming with the rest of the season 10 cast of Potomac at World Pride, which was in DC last weekend. And that was for Ashley's birthday. So I actually think that maybe this was put out there because they knew that people were going to spot Monique on this float at World Pride and, like, be like, oh, why is she with Ashley and Giselle and the girls? Like, so I think that's why it was announced first thing Saturday morning. But yeah, there was a lot of footage and pictures that got out there. It was a very public event, including a group photo of her posing right next to Giselle, who, reminder, like, they were very much at odds in the last reunion with the binder. Monique was coming for Giselle. And so for them to already be posing next to each other fairly happily, it seems, bodes well for them not just, like, being mortal enemies. And like, it seems like there's space for them to maybe forgive one another. That's sort of what I picked up from the body language in that group photo. Again, only so much that can tell us. But in the People article, the source says Monique's in a totally different place right now and fans will see that. She's excited to show who she is now, not as a wife, not just as a mom, but as a woman starting over and taking on life on her own terms. So again, it alludes to a lot of change in her life. And similarly to Rachel Zoe, the big change for her is a divorce. She divorced Kris Samuels, her ex-husband, 2 years ago. They share, I think, 2 kids. But, you know, I feel like Potomac's been filming for, like, weeks or for a couple weeks now, or at least a month. And so it seems like she joined midway through filming. I'm assuming she's filmed some private stuff, but not too far into it, like Phaedra. But, you know, I'm curious to see how that's handled sort of when we eventually see the season. Individually, this Monique announcement made me really excited. Back in the day, I was Team Monique in that whole ordeal. And, you know, that whole thing with Candace and Monique, that season, which I remember that aired, like, in August of the pandemic. That's when it started. And, like, that's a season that, like, people had binged Potomac in the pandemic. So there was more people that were watching it. It was a huge, divisive season. The conversation around the show was never the same. Since then, it sort of became much darker and divided and passionate, which was a good and bad thing, I think, for the show, because it got a lot of people invested and interested, but it also, again, became more toxic among the fans. You know, in a bottle, like, I was very excited when I heard this Monique news, because I just think that she's been really good for the show. I think she's a good reality star. She's pretty open about her life. She's dynamic. She has like a star quality that I think the show could always benefit from. And she mixed in well with the women, honestly. Again, until the end when it became, you know, incredibly dark and divisive, like, she was good for the show. And I think that they can get back to that. If her and Giselle are coexisting already like that, like, I think they can definitely get back to that. And not only am I excited for Monique to be back in this way, I also think that, like, it makes me think down the line of, like, okay, I do think that Candace did need to take this extra season off. She had her baby not that long ago, but maybe she needs a little more time sort of soak into that and sort of some time away from the show to get even more perspective, perhaps. But more so, the reason why I think that is because I really wanted Giselle and Wendy's new dynamic that they really unlocked the last reunion, that great last reunion that was so good. It made me excited for the future of the show before we even knew Monique was coming back. I wanted them to get a little bit more time to sink into that dynamic of their relationship, which was, like, you know, having some respect for one another, being able to trade some jabs without taking things too seriously and too personally. And that's what they were doing at the reunion. I don't think they like each other that much, but they've gotten to this point where they can, like, kind of be frenemy type things. And I like that for them. And I think that if Candace had come back already, they would have fallen out of that very quickly. But I think that if they have one more season to really develop that and nurture that relationship, and then Candace comes back, and Monique's there, and Karen's back from prison, I'm interested in that. And I'm already interested in Potomac. I think I'm excited for the season. But, like, that's intriguing. That's a lot to have going for the show. And it makes me really excited for the future of Potomac. All right. So then on Monday, a couple days later, we get the update from Bryn Whitfield that she is not coming back to The Real Housewives of New York. She was on for two seasons as part of the reboot. And let's just read this entire statement, because it's pretty wild. A little life update. After a bit of thought, I've made the decision to walk away from reality TV for now. Last week, Hoppy, the dating app I co-founded and proudly serve as chief marketing officer, hit a massive download milestone. I can't even put into words how surreal it feels. All I want to do now is pour every ounce of energy into building Hoppy into the number one dating app in the world. I've never heard of anybody who has Hoppy, and I don't know what... It's interesting that she didn't tell us the download milestone, but I digress. The Real Housewives of New York City will always be one of the most fun, chaotic, and magical chapters of my life. It was the honor of a lifetime to help reboot such an iconic franchise. From day one, I've believed Roni is a fan show. We're just temporary custodians of something that truly belongs to the viewers. I actually like that sentiment. I do. I hope I made you laugh a lot, cry a little, and more than anything, I hope there's a TV in heaven so that Mimi, who lived for her shows, could watch me and be proud. To everyone who gave me a chance, cheered me on, and afforded me love and grace, thank you. I'm endlessly grateful. The good news is I'm just getting started. I've never felt more me than on my Spotify podcast, Please See Below. And prepare to laugh, cry, and possibly poop when you read my book coming out later this year. To date, I've only shared a fraction of who I am, what I've been through, and what I've learned. It's the most vulnerable thing I've ever written. Splitting my time between London and NYC offices, building Hoppy alongside the most successful entrepreneurs, developers, and marketers, creating the app where the good guys are, where dating feels fun, safe, and cool again, feels like the lifelong dream I never knew is coming true. As Sheryl Sandberg said, if you're offered a seat at the table on a rocket ship, don't ask what seat, just get on. So here we go. We're done dating his dad. It's time to steal his inheritance. XOXO Brinny. So that is quite the statement. That is an essay. She got in, I mean, honestly, in a smart way, she got in self-promotion of everything she has going on. So, like, good for her. It's kind of giving that meme, like, good for her, but I ain't reading all that. Yeah, I mean, first of all, I didn't know the dating app was called Hoppy, which is very Bethany Frankel coded. If you know, you know. And so, you know, again, this is not a huge surprise. I doubt it was actually her decision. I think that Bryn would have come back to the show if given the chance. But at the same time, she was so cut off from the rest of the cast. I mean, they all got together recently for Jessel's birthday, except for her. So this just really confirms to me that, like, the producers thought that there was no real road back for Bryn in this group. Like, what happened at the end of the season really was something that wanted them all to cut ties with her, and they did. And she, you know, there was no road back for her. And I don't, she did what she did, and I don't necessarily feel bad for her. So yeah, this is not a huge shock. It really isn't. Again, it's quite the statement. I don't have really that much else to say about it. What I am curious about is whether or not we'll get more announcements from the Roni cast, because to me, when we start to get these announcements, it means that like things are moving on the production end. It means that things are shaken. And to me, this means that the cameras are going to pick back up relatively soon for Roni, probably so they can document the Hampton summers. So are we going to get any more announcements? I hope we do, because I think that we should get at least one or two more. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see. But, it's intriguing to not have her as sort of this person who takes up a lot of the oxygen in the room for this cast. What do they do without her? Hopefully it alleviates some of that sort of chaotic tension that was on this show. And I do think they were all trauma bonded from what they went through in Puerto Rico. So we'll see. So then I alluded to this, but Britt Eady, you know, she was a no-show at the Thursday reunion taping for Atlanta. And that was kind of curious. And then she releases this statement about the photos. I'll get into it. About the photos that Kenya shared allegedly of her. She says the photos were not her. She just found this out. So then the next day, the Independent UK is the first to report that Britt is suing Bravo. I'm going to read the article from People's Liza Esquivias. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. Sorry. She wrote, Britt Eady is suing for her betrayal on The Real Housewives of Atlanta. According to court documents obtained by People, Eady filed a $20 million lawsuit on Thursday against Bravo, NBC, and production companies Truly Original and Endemol Shine North America, alleging defamation, intentional infliction of emotional distress, false light and sexual harassment and hostile work environment. It stems from an incident that occurred in episode 5 of this current 16th season, which was filmed last June, in which former castmate Kenya Moore displayed a poster board with explicit images of a woman she suggested was Eady performing oral sex during her hair spa opening party. What a sentence. Moore was suspended from the series soon after and later announced her official exit. Because Moore was working for the network, Eady is also suing them by respondeat superior, a legal doctrine that holds employers responsible for the wrongful conduct of their employees. The notice calls Moore's statements about Eady false, defamatory, harassing, and damaging, and claims that the images were not of Eady. Additionally, it alleges that Eady, quote, did not see the explicit photograph until after certain of these events were aired on Bravo nearly a year later. Defendants willfully, intentionally, recklessly, and or with gross negligence produced, edited, and aired an episode of The Real Housewives of Atlanta on April 6th that included footage of certain of the cast member statements at issue, as well as commentary from other cast members that described the photos displayed. Further, the manner in which the episode was aired falsely yet unmistakably implied that the graphic sexual photograph presented by the cast member depicted Eady. She alleges, on information and belief, defendants knew that the photograph did not depict her, or at least were reckless or grossly negligent in failing to learn that the photograph did not depict her. She claims she attempted to see the photo before the episode aired, but the network, quote, refused to show it to her. By the way of foregoing, defendants contributed to the hostile work environment for Eady and sexually harassed plaintiff by subjecting her to unwelcome, offensive, and sexualized behavior and comments based on her gender by requiring her to continue working in an environment in which she has been subject to a gendered attack, creating an inferior condition or privilege of employment because of her gender. Okay. It concluded by requesting the immediate removal of the episode from public access on all platforms, networks, and media outlets in the defendant's control, along with a public statement acknowledging the episode shared a false depiction of Eady and a monetary award that included the legal fees. If the defendants, quote, fail to appear, Eady asked that a judgment be issued for the sum of no less than $20 million with interest and the cost of fees of this action. Woo! So that news came out one day after Britt was a no-show at the reunion, as I mentioned, and she released this statement. The events of this season have devastated me, and while I cannot say much right now, I do want to set the record straight about one thing. The graphic sexual photo surrounding the events of episode 5. That photo was not of me. As the episode makes clear, I did not see the photo at the time. Rather, I was made aware of the photo being presented at the event, and based on what I was told, assumed that it was somehow a photo of me, which is why I reacted the way that I did. I do not know who was in that photo, but upon seeing it for the first time recently, I know it was not me. I look forward to seeking accountability and moving past this dark part of my life. That's a lot to take in. So essentially, she has now seen this photo that people thought was her, and she is claiming that it is not her. And, you know, by them refusing to let her see it, by them implying heavily that it was her, apparently not looking into the fact that it might not have been her, she is suing them on a variety of claims. $20 million is a lot of money. I mean, I'm not a legal expert, so I really can't provide like an informed opinion on that basis. I do think that like the timing of this rollout of the information is interesting. I mean, maybe she was trying to get her ducks in a row by the time the reunion aired, and then that's why she's, you know, and she knew that it would come out that she wasn't there, so that's why she's announcing it now. It's this hard thing of like, I don't want to, you know, that's a pretty devastating idea of like, somebody presents this photo of you that's very graphic and sexual in nature. That's actually not of you. But I'm confused because I feel like around this show on Watch What Happens Live, in her confessionals and different things like that, I mean, photos like that must exist, I guess. So like, I'm confused why she, I know why she thought it was her because everyone said it was. But what I'm trying to say is that like, that means there were photos of that nature that she knows exist and presumed Kenya had put them up there. I don't know. And obviously it's completely irresponsible to just assume they're her. But if it's not, I had presumed as a viewer and as somebody who, you know, was paying attention to the situation that like it had been clear in those photos that it was her. So apparently it wasn't clear. Apparently it was up for a debate that it was allegedly Brit in those photos. And she seems pretty adamant now. I mean, if you're filing a $20 million lawsuit, you must be sure that those are not you. And what's interesting is that the day of the reunion taping, before we found out that Brit had sued the network, but I think around the same time of her statement, Kenya Moore tweeted an apology. She said, "I'm disappointed to not be part of the RHOA 16 reunion taping today. Please know that I take full accountability for my actions and deeply apologize to all those affected, including Brittany, the cast, crew, guests, and viewers. I look forward to seeing you all back on Bravo soon." So at first I was like, huh, interesting. I mean, you know, Kenya, again, at first came out very strongly around the time of her exit from the show airing. She was going to do that whole YouTube series. She was live tweeting a lot, and then that sort of died down. And then we get this kind of out of the blue apology on reunion taping day, where she says she was basically disinvited, but she also apologized in a big way. And now, after we find out that Brit had sued her and the network, I'm thinking that she was getting ahead of the lawsuit by publicly, you know, taking accountability and apologizing. That seems to me like a legal move potentially. So yeah, I don't really know what to make of this. And maybe I should have like a legal expert on to help me with this, because I don't want to pass judgment either way. But like, again, I think that as viewers, like rightfully so, we've been sort of conditioned to not side with Brit. And to, I mean, I have not liked what I've seen of her on the show, and she's clearly not going to ever come back to the show, but it's a very thorny, complicated thing. And so maybe I'll try to have somebody on to really help me unpack this and what she's really claiming and sort of how she's acted in the time since, how that sort of plays into all of this. But yeah, really disappointing to see how this all played out. And it's just like, damn, like all that for this, you know, it's disappointing. But the last thing I'm going to mention, because I have done Secret Lives of Mormon Wives coverage on here. So we found out at the end of last week, too, that we're getting a Secret Lives of Mormon Wives reunion over basically a month and a half after the season aired, which is a long time. It's going to air on July 1st on Hulu. And it's hosted by Nick Vial, which no comment. But we got all these photos of the women at the cast at the reunion, all their reunion looks. But noticeably absent, of course, was Demi. And Demi was the villain of the season. She ended very much on the outs with most of the cast. And she was not in the photo. So it's like, wait, was she not there? And then we find out, no, that she was not there. And then on Monday, she did this Q&A on Instagram. And somebody asked, "You're not invited to the reunion?" And she says, "I was. It was short notice. And the only day they could get the location secured was the day that me and my entire family did Disneyland. We had already booked all of our flights and the Airbnb was non-refundable, or I would have moved the trip to be there. I tried to have production move it to another day and they couldn't swing it, sadly." That is a wild excuse. Wild, because we're supposed to believe, I mean, that's just wild. I can't even really put the words to it. It's like, you couldn't get a refund on your Airbnb and that's why you didn't go to an incredibly important day for your job and to like maybe help redeem yourself, but also you'd have to face the music from the rest of the cast. That's a wild excuse, but I don't think, I mean, this isn't Bravo, where if you skip a reunion, you're almost certainly not going to be back on the show. We knew from the end of the season with that sort of teaser about Jesse and her husband that, I mean, they've filmed a lot. So you presume that Demi is still on the show and has filmed this upcoming third season. So I don't know how this complicates that, but I'm presuming that this doesn't mean she's off the show and she's sort of talking as if she's still on the show. So I just thought that if you're interested in Secret Lives, you'd be interested to hear about what her excuse was for not being at the reunion and the fact that we are getting a reunion in the first place. I don't buy her excuse, obviously. That's a crazy excuse. Also, they could only secure the location. The location's probably a random studio. So like, it's not like a hard to get location necessarily. Wild. And I wish that she had been there, because I think Demi has a lot to answer for, obviously. And I would have loved to hear from her in that setting. I understand her reticence to show up, but you know, when you're a reality star and you cause drama and you stir the pot, you got to show up and answer for your actions. So, which she did not do. But I'm still very much perched and ready for season 3 whenever we get that. All right, that's it for today's episode. Friday will be a Summer House end of season deep dive, because we are getting the Secrets Revealed episode on Wednesday. So that will sort of complete all the footage we've seen from this season of Summer House, season 9. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to Gabbing with Gib. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast. Please rate and review us if you would be so kind to do so. And we'll see you later this week. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.
USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks, or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at usaa.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.
This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for doggy dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS Store. Visit theupsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.